Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We begin today's show by speaking with Nadia Drost, who was just awarded a Pulitzer Prize in feature writing for her incredible California Sunday magazine piece, When Can We Really Rest? More migrants than ever are crossing the Colombia-Panama border to reach the U.S., 5 days inside the Darien Gap, one of the most dangerous journeys in the world. Before the COVID pandemic, with the support of the Pulitzer Center, Nadia Drost and videographer Bruno Federico put their lives at risk to interview migrants taking this treacherous journey. Nadia Drost also filed a special series called Desperate Journey for the PBS NewsHour, where she is a special correspondent reporting from Latin America. That series was nominated in 2021 for a Peabody Award and received the Best in Show for Television from the National Headliners Award. And you can watch the series and read the piece at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Nadia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, it's such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is such a pleasure to have you. Congratulations on the piece you wrote for the California Sunday Magazine, the PBS series that you did with Bruno Federico. Really amazing reporting. What motivated both of you to follow these migrants through the Darien Gap? It's a 66-mile swath of jungle on the border of Panama and Colombia.
Well, you know, Bruno and I had been living in Colombia as reporters for about a decade, and we had been aware of this migratory route for several years. There have been people from all around the world who have been using the route actually for about a decade, but we had been noticing that in the last few years, the numbers had been going up. And then in 2019, the numbers basically tripled. And so we thought, okay, this is kind of the moment to try to understand what is happening. And we were interested in looking at, you know, why are there more people taking this route? Because it is such an incredibly dangerous route. It's really the last kind of migratory passage you want to choose. And secondly, we wanted to understand, what did it actually mean for migrants to have to cross the Darien Gap? It is a very, very difficult crossing, and we felt that in order to really be able to understand what they went through and to share that with readers and with viewers, we would have to do the trip ourselves, accompanying and you know, walking alongside migrants.
Can you talk about how dangerous this is? It's one of the most dangerous parts of the world. It's also one of the wettest places on the planet.
Yeah, it certainly is. You kind of feel drenched all of the time. If it isn't raining, you're crossing rivers multiple times a day. These rivers are anywhere from, you know, kind of shin high to chest high. And they end up being a real source of danger for migrants, because the rainfalls are such that river levels can just surge almost immediately. And it's really hard when you don't know the region to be able to tell how strong the rivers actually are, how high they are in certain spots. And so migrants are so desperate to get through this section that, you know, sometimes they kind of almost blind themselves to some of the risks and the dangers, and they just have to plow through. So sometimes, you know, they end up crossing rivers and are taken by surprise by the strength of the current. We met several people who lost family members or members of their group who were washed away by the river, either when they were crossing it or when they were sleeping at night by a riverbank, which is often kind of seen as a safe place to sleep. One of the risks of going through the Darien Gap is getting bit by venomous snakes. This happens a lot, actually, to migrants. And so sleeping on the riverbank, where, you know, the forest isn't quite as dense, and you can kind of see the forest floor a little bit better, is a spot where migrants end up sleeping. But there are often flash floods at night, and they sometimes wash migrants away while they're still sleeping in their tents. So it's not an uncommon sight to find bodies wrapped in tents in rivers. But to speak a little bit more generally about the dangers of the Darien Gap, you know, I should point out that the Darien Gap has been inhabited for centuries, mostly by indigenous people. These communities are very, very sparse. And so one of the dangers is that migrants just don't tend to come across anybody except for other asylum seekers or their smugglers for the entire duration of the trek, which can really last anywhere from 5 days to 14 days sometimes. It's very common for people to get lost. You know, the landscape is it all looks the same. It's like a wall of green. Often you can't see the sky because the canopy is so dense. So sometimes people end up going in a circle for days, during which time they run out of food, or perhaps they become so exhausted that they start giving up, you know, anything that is a burden on their backs. So their tents, maybe they're carrying books, maybe they're carrying heavy food like pasta or rice. And they just can't bear to carry it anymore. But, you know, what I should point out is that part of the reason that it is so dangerous is because of, you know, the migrants who take this route, they are unaware of the dangers. There are no markings. This is an illegal crossing. The only way to do it is by hiring smugglers who then abandon them shortly after they cross over into Panama and are still days away from a village. And the reason smugglers do that is because if they're caught by Panamanian authorities, they could face up to 10 years in jail for the crime of assisting people across a border. So one of, you know, if for myself and Bruno and Carlos Villalon, who's a terrific photographer who has actually done this crossing many times, if you can believe it, you know, the dangers for us were not nearly as great because we were able to hire guides who knew the region like the, you know, the back of their hands. And they told us what we needed to prepare for, how many days we needed to pack food, what we needed to bring, and they physically guided us. So we had resources that migrants don't have. And I think that, you know, that is what really brings the Darien Gap crossing to a whole other level in terms of risk and danger beyond what locals encounter, you know, as I mentioned, from venomous snakes to wild boars, to just, you know, the elements of nature, these extreme rainfalls and surging rivers.
You know, watching your piece and reading your piece, we were wondering why this isn't getting more attention. Is it because it is just so treacherous?
So I think that, you know, it's getting more attention in countries around the world where people are fleeing. People are desperate to find a way to safer ground. Many doors to Europe have closed. The doors to the U.S. And also Canada have been closed, you know, further shut. And so word about this route is spreading, and it kind of, you know, it happens on WhatsApp. It happens through word of mouth. But migrants don't tend to share the extreme dangers of the routes with other migrants. This is something I've noticed in reporting on migration in other parts of the world, such as Europe, where, you know, migrants don't want to, they understand why people in their home countries need to leave. They don't want to discourage them from taking a very necessary journey. So they don't necessarily tell them, you know, what a tough time they're having getting legal status in Europe or in the US, or how difficult and dangerous it was to cross. As the necessity of finding, you know, other migratory routes, any kind of, you know, in the just a desperate bid to reach the US increases, I think that this route will continue to become more well known among potential asylum seekers. As to why it's not well known, you know, in North America, I think that we're really accustomed to seeing at the US southern border with Mexico. We're very used to kind of dealing with the varying numbers of migrants coming from Central America and Mexico. The migrants who do the Darien Gap tend to look different. They are from South Asia. They are from Africa. And I think that in the past couple of years, we have seen more attention on this trend of migrants from around the world showing up at the US-Mexican border. And I think that, you know, the natural question is, oh, wait a second, how did that happen? And actually, you know, a few months ago, there were several members of Congress who went to the US-Mexican border. And I remember one of them was very surprised to learn of migrants from Yemen, from Pakistan, who were showing up at the border. And he said, you know, Customs and Border Patrol has told me they're completely shocked by this. This is new. They don't know how to deal with this. And these migrants are coming from countries that have been known to harbor terrorists. A couple things about this actually isn't new. And the U.S. does know that migrants from such a broad variety of countries are in fact coming through the Darien Gap and arriving, you know, are on their way to the Mexican U.S. border. And the reason why is because they actually take in biometric registration of these migrants in Panama as soon as they make it out of the Darien Gap. So Panama has a very strong relationship with the U.S. And basically, you know, it's a crazy sight, but in the middle of this very isolated jungle region in the Darien, there is a kind of prefab house. It's essentially an outpost of U.S. immigration enforcement. And that's where Panamanian authorities take, you know, fingerprints, they scan irises, take passport information of everybody who's coming through the Darien Gap. They cross-check that information with international criminal databases. And if any alerts pop up, I mean, those migrants are not allowed to continue on the journey. So this is actually a lot more controlled than people think it is. And so it's not as though, you know, there's a lot of surprise from authorities, U.S. authorities, that is, these people aren't quite popping up at the border. Authorities have been kind of tracking their movements for through several countries over many months.
You also report that migrants from Asia, the Middle East, and Africa fly into Ecuador or Brazil, where visa requirements are somewhat lax.
Yeah, so this is why this route actually opened up. I mean, it's such a circuitous route. It doesn't seem logical, right?
Right.
If you want to go from Africa to, let's say, West Africa to the US, why would you elongate your voyage? But the truth of it is that most migrants and asylum seekers come from countries where the U.S. does not accept their passport. You can't fly into the U.S. You can't apply for a visa. And so they look for a way to claim asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border. They do that via land, basically. And so the way to do it is they need to get over to the Western Hemisphere via a country that will let them in, and then find their way from that country. And so there are a few South American countries who do allow people from certain Asian countries, Middle Eastern countries, as well as African countries in, with, you know, without a special visa. They can come in on a tourist visa often, or a visa that allows them to, you know, transit through the country, let's say for 30 days. And so most people start making their way from either Brazil or Ecuador, and they travel through South America either by a combination of flights or buses. But then where they get really stuck is once they reach the most northern point of South America, to cross that isthmus into Panama and Central America, there are no roads from Colombia to Panama. So as you mentioned, the Darien Gap is basically this 66-mile wide gap in the Pan-American Highway, that is filled with jungle instead of roads. Someone like myself, who has a Canadian passport, somebody with an American passport, a European passport, tourists can easily go from Colombia to Panama, either by a flight, either by boat. But migrants and asylum seekers aren't allowed to. So I think that one thing that's actually important to keep in mind is that even though it appears that, you know, the Darien Gap is this geographical barrier that means that people have to literally walk from Colombia to Panama, it's not so much the Darien Gap that has forced that route. It's migration policy. Mm-hmm. Panama decided to close the border to migrants and asylum seekers transiting through Panama. They were under a lot of pressure from the U.S. to do that. And as a result, the only way for migrants to make that crossing is to go through this very, very dangerous route. Once migrants are in Panama, there's a really controlled system of how to kind of help them move through in a way that lets Panamanian and American authorities know who they are. They're accounted for. And they move through a system. They're put on buses. They have to, you know, pay for their bus ride to Costa Rica. But they get a special transit pass and they're on their way and they're registered in the Panamanian system. So one of the questions that, you know, I had coming out of this trip is, well, if migration is happening, you know, if Panama is managing to do it in such a controlled way, why can't it basically exert that same kind of organization and control before migrants start the Darien Gap journey? And thus, you know, possibly avoiding that dozens and dozens, if not hundreds and hundreds of people die, trying to make this Darien Gap crossing every year.
Have you been able to ask any officials that question?
So we did speak with the Panamanian chief of migration, as well as the head of border services in Panama, and their focus has really been on trying to persecute and criminalize the smugglers. So their explanation has been that the reason the Darien Gap is so dangerous is because smugglers are exposing the migrants to various dangers. I disagree with that. I think that migrants are forced to hire smugglers because they're not allowed to cross legally, and that if anybody is helping them get across the border safely, it's actually the smugglers. Of course, you've got bad apples in that group and you have good apples. I met several smugglers who were very, very helpful to migrants and wanted them to get across safely and help them out a lot. There are others who, you know, after abandoning them in the jungle and, you know, understanding what kind of goods these migrants are carrying, they will then later rob them at gunpoint of everything that they own. So there is a real mix, but I think there's a simple solution. When a route is illegal, people are forced to hire smugglers. If the route becomes legalized and migration is legalized, then people can find safer ways to get across borders.
You know, you're talking about the smugglers, Nadia. You tell some horrific stories, and I just want to let listeners know that we're going to share a very distressing story here. You talk about how people on this route are robbed, and you also talk about what they do to women to see if they are hiding money. I mean, this was just horrific to learn about. Can you tell us about that, what you heard from some women?
Yeah, I would say most women, and this is really chilling, most women who cross the Darien Gap are not only robbed, but the bandits who rob them and who often, rob them at gunpoint or by the blade of a machete are either raped or the bandits insert their fingers into women's vaginas to search for any dollar bills that women may carry. This is obviously a horrific experience for the women to go through. It's also a horrific experience for whoever they're traveling with to witness. Their children often witness it, their partners or husbands. And of course they're incredibly vulnerable. They're being held at gunpoint and, members of traveling groups of migrants can't do anything about it except submit to it. And I think that what is also particularly chilling is just how systematic this is. Aside from the group that I was traveling with and one other group, in the 14 days that I was in the Darien Gap region, I didn't hear of any other group who didn't get robbed or sexually. A guarantee.
It's just devastating. Today, we're joined by Nadia Drost, who was just awarded a Pulitzer Prize in feature writing for her incredible California Sunday magazine piece, When Can We Really Rest? More migrants than ever are crossing the Colombia-Panama border to reach the United States. Nadia and videographer Bruno Federico took this treacherous journey to interview migrants. Nadia also filed a special series called Desperate Journey for the PBS NewsHour, where she is a special correspondent reporting from Latin America. Let's just play a clip from one of your PBS pieces. And will you tell us a little bit about George, the migrant you met from Cameroon, before we play this clip, and what happened to George?
Sure. So, we were walking with a group of Cameroonians who were fleeing a civil conflict in Cameroon between the Anglophone side and the Francophone side. So all of the Cameroonians who we encountered were English speaking, who were fleeing a Francophone government. And the group that we were walking with had a few Cameroonians who were really injured and were having a lot of difficulty keeping up. Sometimes their friends had to literally piggyback them through the jungle. And one evening when the Cameroonians decided to, you know, call it a night and find a campsite where they could sleep, they settled in for the night, but two members of their group, including George, did not show up that night. And the reason is that George had fallen so far back behind because he had injured his ankle and it was getting worse and worse. And he was literally dragging himself through the forest with the help of his friend Mohammed. They slept in a tent together that night. And in the morning, Mohammed, you know, had to kind of run ahead to try to catch up with the rest of their group. And in the meantime, he took the tent with him, we came across George, you know, I would say probably like 12 hours or so after he was abandoned by his group. He was all by himself. And in the meantime, he, you know, he was really hobbling. And when he was crossing a river, he fell and he dislocated his shoulder. So now he had two injuries. And when we came across him, he was incredibly worried and flustered about how he was going to make it through the Darien Gap alone, where he was going to sleep without a tent, and how he was going to get himself out of there.
Well, let's play a clip from a PBS NewsHour piece. This is George, a migrant from Cameroon.
The Taliban targeted our family from time to time. That is why I had to leave my country.
We packed our food for 5 days, and with guides we hired, followed the migrants as they set out on a day-long ascent of a mountain ahead. The steep and slippery terrain was tough for everyone, but nearly impossible with an injury. This woman from Cameroon could barely put weight on her knee. Exhaustion took over.
God, the pain is too much.
Yeah.
The pain is more than me.
Up the mountain, the smuggler the Cameroonians and Pakistanis hired demanded payment. As we hiked, young men carrying square backpacks filled with bricks of cocaine passed us. We were told to expect their heavily armed security patrolling, so we put our camera away.
I'm full.
But see that courage.
My foot.
After a steep descent, the group made it to this river. They were almost out of food. Smugglers won't venture any farther into Panama, where they could face over a decade in prison if they're caught. This one, who didn't want his face shown, wished smugglers weren't prosecuted so they could help migrants safely complete their journey.
I've had to see mothers who tell their children they can't go on, to give themselves up to God. For anyone who has a family or kids, that breaks your heart.
That is a clip from reporting from Nadia Dross, today's guest. 5 days inside the Darien Gap, one of the most dangerous journeys in the world. And she has a piece, many pieces for the PBS NewsHour. It's a series called Desperate Journey. Nadia, I know we have to let you go. One more question. For those who do make it through the Darien Gap, what happens? You briefly talked about the journey, you know, from Costa Rica, but then they have to go through Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, and then Mexico. So what happens on that long journey?
Sure. So I'll try to, you know, very quickly go through it. They tend to be able to go through Central America fairly quickly. Where they really get stuck is in Mexico. So basically the migrants who we followed, what they encountered was that the U.S.-Mexico border wall essentially had moved south to the Mexico-Guatemala border. And that's because there was so much pressure from the United States. This was during the Trump administration still, that Mexican authorities were being pressured to basically stop migrants from transiting north to the U.S.-Mexico border. And they had checkpoints absolutely everywhere. And really, the only way to make it through Mexico for migrants who, I mean, we had met migrants who had been stranded in southern Mexico, sleeping on the street for months, unable to keep on moving. And the only way for them to go north was by hiring a smuggler. I don't think I have to, you know, explain to your listeners the many risks of getting smuggled through Mexico. But I think that what's really changed is, you know, what happens to migrants and asylum seekers once they get to the U.S.-Mexico border. And so because of the Trump administration's Remain in Mexico policy, most asylum seekers and migrants were actually turned back and had to wait for their applications to be made and their court hearings in Mexico, where they had they were basically expelled back into the hands of kidnappers. Today, you know, we still see the really devastating effects of Title 42, which Trump started, Biden has continued. And that, you know, ostensibly is a public health measure that was taken. But really what it's doing is expelling the great majority of asylum seekers who show up at the border on the auspices that, you know, the risks of them entering with COVID are too high. So today, you know, it's still extremely hard to apply for asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border. Title 42 made it nearly impossible. We're now starting to see a very, very slow, small kind of opening in the number of asylum seeker applications that are being made at the border. I can say that for, you know, the vast majority of asylum seekers that I followed, and I've remained in touch with, you know, many Cameroonians, several Pakistanis, as well as Haitians, most of them were eventually able to cross the border legally by applying for asylum at a legal port of entry. This was before the pandemic. And they have been applying for asylum while waiting for sometimes 8 months in ICE facilities. And most of them today are still going through their asylum proceedings. The huge block for a lot of them is waiting to get a work permit. So most of them have to wait a year to get a work permit. They're living in, you know, a lot of limbo. It's impossible for them to sustain themselves and make a living when they're not legally allowed to work in the United States. And I will say that, you know, there were people who I met from Cameroon and Pakistan and Haiti who were deported to those countries. The situation in Cameroon continues to worsen, actually. The villages that these people came from continue to be set ablaze by security forces. There continue to be massacres. It is not a safe country to be sent back to. And Haiti, as you know, has been going through, you know, incredible political upheaval, as well as its own health crisis with COVID-19. So there aren't a lot of happy endings in this story.
Well, it is so important. Huge thanks to you, Nadia, Bruno Federico, and your entire team for bringing us these incredible stories. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for giving me a chance to talk about it.
Nadia Drost was just awarded a Pulitzer Prize in feature writing for her California Sunday magazine piece, When Can We Really Rest? More migrants than ever are crossing the Colombia-Panama border to reach the U.S. 5 days inside the Darien Gap. Nadia also filed a special series called Desperate Journey for the PBS NewsHour, where she is a special correspondent reporting from Latin America. And you can find the pieces at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a short break, we will speak with David K. Johnston, also a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter, about the Biden administration's infrastructure plan. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.